I think that you can make a case for bribery now, and I think that discussion needs to be seriously developed and considered, because there was an effort to try to seek to get something of value from Mr. Zelensky, the president of Ukraine.
This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Tuesday, November 5th. Today, legal analysis with Ellie Mistal, executive editor of the website Above the Law, with breaking news all over the place on the legal front, like Trump and bribery in the impeachment case. Bribery is actually cited in the U.S. Constitution as grounds for impeachment. That clip was Congresswoman Jackie Speier with CBS's Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation on Sunday, so that's one thing. We also have an appeals court saying the president's tax returns should be turned over to the Manhattan DA. We have Lev Parnas news that arrested Rudy Giuliani associate. He now wants to cooperate with the impeachment inquiry. The Roger Stone trial begins today, and the first full transcripts have now been released of depositions by witnesses in the Trump-Ukraine congressional investigation. Among other things, former ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch says she felt physically threatened by Trump and Giuliani, such as when Trump told the president of Ukraine, quote, "She's going to go through some things." Chilling, right, to read about yourself in a White House transcript that way? All that already this week, and it's only Tuesday. Again, our guest is Ellie Mistal, executive editor of the website Above the Law and a contributing writer for The Nation. He was also legal editor of the WNYC Supreme Court podcast called More Perfect. Hi, Ellie. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Brian.
Let's start with bribery.
Yes.
An impeachable offense actually named in the Constitution. Could you make a bribery case against President Trump?
I actually think we could. I think we could make it on two different grounds at this point, actually. I would actually go for more like an extortion case against Trump because I feel like that's closer to what he did. But bribery...
But wait, let me take you down that rabbit hole a little bit. How is bribery different from extortion? We're saying today that maybe Trump offered Zelensky a bribe, military aid in exchange for digging up dirt on Trump's political rivals. But you're right. Usually people accuse him of trying to extort those investigations from Zelensky. What's the difference, and does it matter in this case?
Well, it's exactly like you just said. What is the thing of value, right? And depends on which side you're on. The thing of value from Zelensky's perspective is the military aid. So Trump was trying to extort Zelensky, trying to get something of value from Zelensky in exchange for that aid. That would be the extortion case. The bribery case is actually not that he was trying to extort a bribe from, right? The bribery case is that he was soliciting a bribe, the bribe being do this work against my enemies and I will give you what you want, right? So if we look at the kind of overview legal definition of bribery, it's the offering, giving, or soliciting or receiving of any item of value as a means of influencing the actions of the individual holding a public legal duty. That is the definition of bribery. And what Trump most likely did is solicit a bribe in the form of, here's another thing that he did illegally, in the form of a campaign finance violation, right? So the reason why we go to this question, the reason why the Congresswoman did, and the reason why we think about it this way, is that the Republican argument at this point, I mean, they're basically in the Wile E. Coyote phase of, if I don't look down, I can't fall. Right. And so we keep trying to say, like, no, look down. You're going to gravity is a thing. Right. And so Republicans are trying to gaslight the nation into thinking that all of these bad things do not rise to the level of criminal activity. Now, there is nothing in the Constitution that requires criminal activity to occur for impeachment. But if you want to talk about crimes, you've got the campaign finance violation. That's how we get into bribery, and that's how we get into extortion. As you pointed out, Brian, bribery is listed in the Constitution as an example of a high crime or misdemeanor.
It's treason, bribery, or other high crimes or misdemeanors. That's the phrase, right?
Yes.
Now, Trump's defenders point out three things, and let's go through these. Number one, in the Trump-Zelensky phone call notes, as released by the White House, Zelensky seems perfectly happy to investigate the Bidens and the 2016 conspiracy theory. It doesn't sound like he's being pushed or resisting.
Yeah, that's a really bad argument. You don't think about this from the standpoint of the person under duress. People will say what they have to say to get what they think they need, right? So Zelensky's state of mind during this call is actually not particularly important to whether or not Trump was soliciting a bribe.
And also the power differential between the United States and Ukraine is so vast that one would think the president of Ukraine getting a phone call audience with the president of the United States would be extremely solicitous. And yes, Mr. President, I would love to do that, Mr. President, that kind of thing. defense point number two, Zelensky never did announce those investigations into Biden or 2016 as Trump and his team were asking him to do.
Yes, this is another classic Trumpism, right? Like, I am too incompetent to commit crimes because they never succeed, right? Like, attempted bribery is also bribery. Attempted extortion is also extortion. Attempted conspiracy is also conspiracy. We've been through this before. The fact that he failed to commit his crime does not mean that he wasn't attempting to commit a crime. And we have laws in this country that contemplate the attempt of crime just as seriously as the fruition of crime.
And number three, related, I guess, the U.S. did release the military aid. How much would that complicate your bribery case?
That is actually a legitimate complication, right? Because now we get into a little bit more of Trump's state of mind here. Was he just woofing on the phone with Zelensky, or did he actually intend to withhold this aid? That's why, to my mind, the call, while damning, is not enough, right? And that's why all of this testimony that's come out or that's being come out is important, because it shows the entire pattern and practice of Trump withholding this aid. If it was just the one phone call, the fact that the aid was eventually released might be enough to like throw a monkey wrench into the apparent plot. But we have so many witnesses
that
testify across multiple occasions how Trump tried to stop the aid. We have the directives, the alleged directives from Mick Mulvaney putting an anonymous hold on the aid. So all of that goes to, and this is why the Democrats have to do this work and have to take these depositions and eventually have to make them public. It's because you have to show there was an entire plan here. There was a plot going on. And that goes beyond the damning evidence in the phone call.
Here's a legal question that came in on a voicemail from a listener.
Okay. Good morning. I'm enjoying the podcast. Thank you. It's been very informative. I am curious as to why a special prosecutor hasn't been even suggested at this point. In the Clinton impeachment, it seems like Ken Starr had ample opportunity to do a number of things, including he started by looking at one thing and ended impeaching him on something totally different. And we're not going to get that kind of expansive investigation here, it seems like. And I'm wondering why they wouldn't want to do that.
Interesting question. And to clarify for our listeners who may not have followed that whole thing, there was a special prosecutor or special counsel for Clinton, for Nixon, Robert Mueller for Trump Russia. Why not Trump Ukraine when there's so much evidence of potential criminal activity, rather than leaving this to Congress, which is the political branch?
Friends, we all have to understand that the United States Attorney General, William Barr, is easily the most corrupt attorney general in American history. He is worse than Jeff Sessions, who I think is an open bigot. Bill Barr has somehow lowered the bar from where Jeff Sessions was. The only reason why we had a special prosecutor for Trump Russia is because Jeff Sessions did the right thing and recused himself, and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein appointed the special prosecutor. The only way you can have a special prosecutor is if the U.S. Attorney General gives their say-so. And William Barr sees himself more like Trump's royal bather to just wash the dirt off of him than the United States Attorney General. There's no way this should proceed.
Did anybody ask Barr one way or another, is this worthy of a special counsel, or is it just assumed he wouldn't do it?
I don't know who's supposed to ask him. I don't know if like Nancy Pelosi's like, hey, Bill,
right,
you want to do the right thing?
Or even, I guess,
but
to investigate it himself as the head of the Justice Department and a potential crime here.
Well, yes, in fact, they did. The whistleblower did. There were three or four criminal referrals about, like, all these people testifying now, many of them made criminal referrals to the Justice Department to investigate Trump's, you know, whatever with Ukraine. And Barr refused to follow up on any of those criminal referrals, right? So Barr has already insinuated himself, to say nothing of the fact that he's implicated in many of these schemes. Barr has already insinuated himself to cut off criminal investigations that we should have had into this thing. So when people are saying, like, oh, why are the Democrats doing things behind closed doors? It's because the Intelligence Committee under Adam Schiff has had to do the investigative work that should have been done by the Attorney General because Barr refused to do it. And there is no way this can end, this should end, without an impeachment investigation into Bill Barr.
Next case. Marie Yovanovitch, ambassador to Ukraine, recalled and reviled by Trump. In the transcript notes, Trump tells Zelensky, quote, she's going to go through some things. And she told the House committees in her deposition about these warnings, like the 1 a.m. phone call from the State Department official saying, come home on the next plane. This is about your security. That's a quote. What do you make of it in legal terms or in the impeachment context?
Without Perez, the person who allegedly made this phone call.
Made that 1 a.m. call.
Yeah. There's not an indictable offense there.
And
I
don't know if she's supposed to have been threatening, if the context there was she might have been threatening Yovanovitch or if she was warning Yovanovitch.
That's why I'm saying warning. Without her testimony and knowing what she knows, it's hard to make a case either way. What I will say is this. The Republicans have decided that Trump's abusive treatment towards women is not a thing they care about. We know who are not Republicans. We know that Trump has a pattern of being particularly rude and particularly nasty and particularly bullying towards any woman who crosses him. And so it is not at all surprising to think, it's not difficult to imagine that Trump doing something to mentally or physically harm or threaten, I should say, a woman in a position of power whom he didn't like. Is that an impeachable offense? Is that an indictable offense? Is that a da, 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 da? It is a human offense, right? That Republicans have just decided it is okay. And what I think is important to say is to remind people that Trump's treatment of women in general is not okay and should not be allowed or glossed over by Republicans and the media. Whether or not it rises to the level of a criminal prosecution, I almost don't care. What I care is that we stop allowing this alleged sexual predator to continue to harm or attempt to harm women.
You don't think Trump would have been as implicitly threatening to men, or has on many cases, men in his orbit who he then comes to perceive as disloyal to him?
You don't see the same level of nastiness, do you?
Michael Cohen.
I mean, think about Michael Cohen, right? He didn't threaten to break Michael Cohen's ankles, right? He didn't even fire Michael Cohen, right? Like, Michael Cohen quit. Like, he didn't say he's
going to go through something.
Right. He seems to always reserve an extra gear, right? An extra burst of nitrous oxide when it's a woman who crosses him.
Okay. Next case. Related. Rudy Giuliani associate Lev Parnas. The federal indictment says he tried illegally, quote, to advance the political interests of a Ukrainian government official who sought the dismissal of the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. That ambassador was, of course, the same Marie Yovanovitch. Yesterday, Parnas's lawyer suddenly announces he wants to cooperate with the impeachment inquiry by complying with congressional subpoenas for documents and testimony. What do you make of it in terms of Parnas's defense strategy or implications for impeachment?
It's only 10:30 in the morning, but unless something really ridiculous happens today, I think this is the biggest story of the day.
Really?
Because one of the things that we are learning, and you've seen, I'm sure, the release of some of the Mueller documents finally, right? One of the things that the Mueller documents show is that Paul Manafort was the guy. And one of the things that I think people were constantly surprised about during the Russia investigation is that Manafort never flipped. Manafort went down like Wee Bay from the wire. He was willing to take all the weight all the weight. He was willing to do the time. He is literally in jail. Manafort never flipped. Now let's fast forward to Ukraine. And it seems like some people are flipping. It seems like Manafort, that omerta that Manafort decided to give to Trump is not what Lev Parnas decided to give to Trump. And if people like Parnas start flipping, who knows how many other people might decide that it's time to save their own skin and tell the truth to Congress. We've already seen Trump completely unable to shut down this investigation the way he was able to shut down Russia's investigation because people are willing to testify with or without his approval. We still don't know what's going to happen with John Bolton. Certainly, Bolton seems like he could be compelled at least to testify, right? So again, with the Parnas flipping is important because this didn't happen to Trump, not necessarily because Parnas has like all the goods, but because this really wasn't happening to Trump. Only Michael Cohen turned on Trump, and that was after Michael Cohen lied and ruined his own credibility. If Parnas is flipping before he starts lying, like this is the canary in the coal mine to me of whether or not Trump can actually keep this investigation under wraps.
Next case. An appeals court saying yesterday the president's tax returns should be turned over to the Manhattan DA, who's investigating the Donald Trump, Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal hush money case. So what does the appeals court ruling mean? It does not mean that Trump's tax returns for the 8 years that DA Cy Vance is requesting are going to be on the front page of the New York Post in 3 days, right?
It does not mean that, no. And it actually was a very smart, very narrow ruling, simply saying, again, that Trump's bonkers legal arguments is bonkers and should not be, and that Cy Vance should be able to subpoena whatever Cy Vance needs to subpoena towards his case. Now, Trump will likely appeal this to the Supreme Court. And his hope here, his only hope, is that his handpicked justices, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, align with the other conservatives and bail him out. Again, there is no legal theory here, so it would just be a complete bailout by the Supreme Court. And I don't know that that's going to happen. Again, I don't like to come on your show optimistically, but but you already got me to say that I can count to 20, and so I'll be optimistic here again. For the Supreme Court to take a case requires 4 votes, not 5, just 4, right? So usually Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, Neil Gorsuch, and Brett Kavanaugh are willing to take the worst cases to help Republicans, right? Roberts generally wants to stay out of the political fray, but they don't need his vote. They only need 4. On this case, I am not sure that Neil Gorsuch wants to hear this case because Neil Gorsuch, while I could spend the rest of my life arguing against him, is a true ideologue. He's not a Republican ideologue. He's his originalist ideologue. And as an originalist ideologue, I don't think that he wants a king, right? And Trump's legal argument is we should treat him like a king. So I think there's a good chance that Neil Gorsuch doesn't want any part of this. I think there's a good chance that John Roberts doesn't want any part of this. And the easiest thing for the Supreme Court to do would be to refuse to hear the appeal because the Second Circuit opinion is so clearly right.
The argument would be that Trump, as president of the United States, cannot be investigated. He can pull executive privilege on just about anything. And by extension, the law firm that is not the president, not part of the government, that has his tax returns also could not be subpoenaed for those returns.
Exactly. So he's trying to hit a bank shot. He's trying to hit a bonkers bank shot off a ridiculous principle to begin with. This principle that the president cannot be investigated. Even if you agreed with that, how does that flow to his accounting firm? Like it makes no sense.
For you as a criminal justice reform advocate, you have a strong sense of how much the justice system can be heavy-handed, right?
Yes.
Investigators, prosecutors, the police. Trump says he's the victim of these kinds of overreach that I'm guessing you believe are actually very common, even routine. He tried in one of his recent speeches to identify with Black Americans because the police are being heavy-handed on him or the law enforcement establishment. Is it a double standard for progressive now to salute the FBI and the prosecutors as so morally upright against the guy they're investigating for possible crimes?
I first of all, Trump doesn't know what pain is. All right, if he's talking about what the criminal justice system can actually do to a person, right? Trump has a bully pulpit. He's got his Twitter followers. He's got an attorney general working for him. Trump does not know what it is like to be crushed underfoot of the system, A. B, I don't praise the FBI and the prosecutors and whatever. I stay true. Like, I worry about prosecutorial overreach as much when it comes to the president as I would with anybody else. The issue here is that we are not in a situation of prosecutorial overreach. We are in the investigative phase of this process. One of the things that I've said a lot online is that any argument Trump makes, just imagine a drug dealer making the same argument, right? Imagine Nino Brown saying, like, well, you can't look at my taxes, I'm the king. Like, no, it would never fly. Nobody would ever believe that, right? So no, I don't think it's hypocritical for criminal justice reformers to understand how the criminal justice system works and to see it being applied to everybody equally under the law is actually everything all we want, right? The issue with criminal justice reform, people do not want two different justice systems, right? We want one justice system. We want the justice system that I would face as a black man in this city to be the same as Harvey Weinstein would face as a rich white man in the city. That is the goal of reform. And so seeing Trump be put to the same justice system is actually part of what people are going for.
Elie Mistal, he's the executive editor of the website Above the Law. He's a contributor to The Nation. And now you have many, many more reasons than you had 40 minutes ago to go back and listen to the whole Radiolab podcast series, More Perfect, on which Elie was the legal editor. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Again, listeners, you can call and ask an impeachment news question. Just leave a voicemail anytime, including your name and where you're calling from, and some of you will hear your questions on the show. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-TALK or 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.